Hello and welcome to episode 151 of the Rollo and Slappy Show. Today is July 1st, 2019. I am Rollo McFlugel and with me is Slappy Jones 2. And we are both from McFlugel.com and we want to welcome you to the third quarter of 2019. Slappy, can you believe that it is that deep into the year already?
No, I can't believe it. No. We're halfway through.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, it's funny because from a sales point, you're always thinking of where you are year to date, month to date, quarter to date. And yeah, it's halfway through. And it feels like, man, I could use a couple extra months in this year.
I've learned that time flies by a lot more when your job involves. When your job involves deadlines to get projects done.
Oh, yeah. So, thanks for the reminder. We'll be hitting the phones hard this week. Right. Although, no, I won't because it's 4th of July week and nobody works this week. So,
slackers must all be communists.
Yeah, they are. All right. Anyway.
Yeah. So the show notes page for this episode is McFlugel.com/151. We're going to have some links for some of the stuff we talk about, I think. And also ways to check out libertymugs.com where you can buy awesome theme or libertarian theme mugs. And also this episode, after listening to this, if you haven't done so already, which shame on you if you have not, but it would be a good time for you to go to 10hoursatbitcoin.com. And we've been talking about that for a little bit and the bounty we have to make a wiki page for the history of the attacks of Bitcoin. And we were offering a bounty of 500 Bitcoin worth $500. Oh. And Bitcoin's not money yet, so it's not in the unit of account, Slappy. But we've decided to increase the bounty to $2,000 worth of Bitcoin. So if you're interested in that, go to follow the link on the show notes page. Go to 10hoursbitcoin.com and scroll down to donate. And it'll take you to the Tallycoin page. And if you have any questions on it, you can contact myself, Heavily Armed Clown, who's been on this show before, or J.W. Weatherman.
We're all on Twitter. After you earn your $2,000 worth of Bitcoin, head on over to libertymugs.com and buy a $100 mug.
Yeah, yeah, that would actually be the best thing for you to do. Actually, I think, and if you donate to the... because we are taking donations for 10hoursatbitcoin.com to pay for this bounty. So maybe if you don't think that you can do the bounty, but you want to help out, then why don't you throw some money in? And if you do throw some money in, you'll get a discount to use at libertymugs.com. So,
which is not eligible on the $100 mug.
No, that's, yeah, unfortunately.
Any
yeah,
other mug not. On the site, the discount counts for. Not for the $100 mug.
Just because if we're going to make a mug that says this mug costs $100, we want it to actually cost $100.
Right.
And what are we going to do if like hyper Bitcoinization happens or Bitcoin becomes money and dollars are just like worth nothing? That might be like the cheapest mug ever.
Right.
It might run us out of business actually.
Right. So get it while it's expensive.
Yes. Get it while it means something.
Yeah. Cool. So what are we talking about?
Maybe what I'll do is I got to see if I can price things in Bitcoin without being pegged to the dollar and say this mug costs one Bitcoin.
Woo.
Because then we're like, we're really good.
Yeah.
If someone buys it, we'll be in good shape, especially if it goes the way that we were just talking about. So I bring up Bitcoin. I bring up 10 hours of Bitcoin. You want to introduce our episode topic?
Sure.
If you haven't guessed what it is already.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about... I was thinking of something else I could throw them off on. No, we're talking about Bitcoin. There was an article this week, which I guess is really about gold. But we're also going to be talking about Bitcoin. Rollo, a couple weeks ago, maybe a month ago, a little more. Yeah. Did a debate that was on Tasting Anarchy?
No, it was on Peaceful Treason.
It was on Peaceful Treason. Yes, it was on Peaceful Treason. And it was a good debate with who were you debating?
Chris Karambas.
Yes. And you were taking a Bitcoin maximalist position, and he was taking, I guess, an altcoin. He works with an altcoin.
Yeah. I feel bad. I forget what it is.
Okay, we were prepared for this one.
Well, I wasn't expecting this kind of hard-hitting question. Yeah. I'm your co-host. You're supposed to throw me softballs.
You were the one who did the debate. I just listened to it.
Yeah, it was Bitcoin maximalism versus multi-coinism.
Multi-coins, And
will there be one money, or will there be a bunch of currencies?
Multiple currencies
or monies competing without one becoming the dominant one to be the only one.
And I actually thought it was pretty good. The conversation was respectful. Nobody was talking over each other. Nobody was name calling. It didn't even seem really contentious at all.
It wasn't. I mean, we were kind of goofing off in the beginning before we went on, and then afterwards we were goofing off too. Yeah. And I think there's, I'm going to cut in. But yeah, there's some points that I wanted to clarify. I know that Jared from Peaceful Treasons had more
tasting
questions.
Anarchy. It's obviously not tasting.
We were talking about them right before we went on.
Yeah. Okay.
Which you should check out them too.
Yeah, they're great too.
But there were some issues that Jared's still not sold on with Bitcoin maximalism, and I think he brings up some points that are worth talking about, and. And I don't think there were some spots in the debate I don't think I did a great job on. It's kind of and I don't mean to like be saying, oh, I,
well,
I
he's
had
saying
a better
the
answer.
Same thing too. So, saying there's so I mean, I don't know that he's saying this, but sure he's saying, I should have said this. I should have said that.
As soon as we were done the debate and hit the stop button on the record. For recording, we were both saying like, man, I just like missed so many points I wanted to make.
And I'm sure that's the same with like Gene Epstein probably says that when he's done the debate.
Sure. Yeah. Everyone does it. So I'm not trying to
say you really would have killed him if you said these things.
Right. Because it's part of,
it's just part of debate. Part of doing debate. It is what it is. And it was, but I thought it was a really good episode and it was, it's worth checking out. So we should put a link to that episode.
Yeah, they'll definitely be in the
Peaceful Trees in the show notes page. But before we get to that, which we will, let's talk about this asteroid that was discovered. I don't know who discovered it, but there was an article. It may have been linked on Drudge. Maybe I saw it on LinkedIn or something or Twitter. But space miners race to an asteroid worth quintillions. Could 16 psych make every person on Earth a billionaire? The space mining race is heating up. And then the article just goes on to say they found an asteroid worth about $700 quintillion of gold, which is kind of funny.
Is that more or less than the current money supply?
I think.
How many billions?
Too many to count. It's a lot. Quintillion. So, yeah, I mean, billion, trillion, quadrillion, quintillion. It's a lot of money.
Is it? I guess septillion is, I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a lot. And what do you think that would do to the price of gold?
I think we'd all be super rich. I don't think it would.
Yeah, I think none of us will ever work again, and we'll just buy whatever we want.
Right. It's
because
like
we all have,
you know,
so
what it
much
is?
Gold.
It's like the South Park episode with the Space Cash.
Yeah. Was that Space Cash? Was that Baby Farks McGeezak?
Yes. With the Pinewood Derby car.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 You ain't got nothing on us.
But yeah, I could continue with this.
We were talking about this. Yeah. When were we talking about this? We were talking about intrinsic value.
It was a long time ago. Yeah, I want to run victory laps over this.
Yeah, we should. Let's brag about it. We were saying that gold, like nothing has intrinsic value. That's value subjective, right?
Right.
There's no intrinsic value in gold, in anything.
And before someone says, well, actually, intrinsic value in this narrow definition means something to do with capital. It's like, we're not talking about that. We're talking about something that, you know, whether value is subjective or not.
Right. And so if you flooded the market with gold, and even at the time we were saying that there's more gold available, people can go get it.
Sure.
It's just, and I believe we even mentioned if they found gold in outer space.
That's what the point was. That was kind of the main thing is like, what happens if we start mining asteroids and they have asteroids that are filled with gold? I mean, and gold becomes trivial to mine.
And
that destroys all this money. It destroys
it's no longer money.
Its most important property is that it's hard to get. Right. And so the gold over its history, I think it's like 1 to 2% of its supply is added every year.
Right.
And so that very minor increase is what help stabilize it as a secure like store of value that you're not you know, because if you can add a lot to it, then the amount you have is going to be worth a lot less, right?
So yeah, now that you could add a lot to it, but it's going to cost you a lot of money and it's not going to be profitable because you added too much gold to the supply. So you're losing money by getting the gold, which is, you know, a good thing. Mm-hmm. Unless you find an asteroid that's made out of gold and big as a state and you can bring it back to Earth.
Yep.
That's going to inflate the, you know, or drop the value to basically nothing. If everyone could be a billionaire off it.
It depends. It depends on what happens. If they find like a single golden asteroid and just kind of bring it to Earth and plop it down and equally distribute it. And now there's like, I don't know what to just say. You have 1,000 times more gold than you did before. All that would do would be drop the value, per dollar price of gold by a factor of 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
But if you couldn't go out and get more gold, then
that's good. Gold, great. Gold that's still it resets its value and
right.
You go
and
from
so
there.
That's why this is an important concept for Bitcoin and for money in general. And I know Murray Rothbard makes this point is that this, and people don't quite understand this because people get terrified of deflation, but the supply, your money supply doesn't matter in the sense of like how many units there are of something out there. Supply as in like if it's a fixed supply, like if Rollo money, there's
tractor coin. Let's go with that
one. Yeah. Tractor coin. If there's a billion tractor coin RV cash out there, it doesn't matter if that's the fixed supply. It really doesn't matter if there's a billion of them or 1,000 of them.
So there's a fixed supply,
right? The price per each is going to just adjust to the number of it, and you know, as long as the distribution stays the same, it's not really gonna affect anything. So the same applies to gold. If there was just this instantaneous, almost like if everyone's gold holding got multiplied.
Right. It's not going to do anything.
Yeah.
In purchasing power.
Right.
Oh, it would dilute it. Like if I have one gold bar and you have none and then we both get one.
Well, I'm saying that it follows the same distribution.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like this very narrow case that would not ever actually happen in reality.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Would that do anything? Are we incorrect? Because what about people who don't own gold and own?
That's what I'm saying. They would get something, but the person who holds gold would be losing. Essentially, that value is stolen from them and given to someone else.
Yeah, this would have to be gold, not gold today, but gold if gold were being used as money.
Sure.
Properly, actually, as money. Not just like being held in central, but yeah, it would be like if they decided that if Bitcoin were, if there were 42 million Bitcoin in the supply instead of 21 million, like presumably each Bitcoin would just be worth half as much today, mm-hmm. but assuming the distribution remained the same, it wouldn't make a difference.
Right.
So that's the point we're trying to make. We kind of weren't clear with what we were.
Correct.
The little scenario that we were bringing up. But, you know, hopefully the point makes sense. Which I think it does. It
should. Yes. So, anyway, there's that.
Yeah.
It's just for the people hanging on to gold as a money saying how reliable. Yeah, and which, hey, what do they have? 6,000 years that gold's been around and being used.
Yeah, it's got a good track record. And maybe it's good that gold didn't become money, because if gold were still money, I would have to think that the price of gold would be tremendously higher than it is today. Although, I don't know, because I know Saifedean Ammous, who wrote the Bitcoin Standard, which a lot of people in our little libertarian circles have been reading that, and they seem to be enjoying it. So if you're not reading it, get with the program.
Check it out.
And read that book. But he was saying that the price of a cow has always been like generally an ounce of gold. So
yes, he did say that.
I don't know. I don't know if how much that still holds true with gold not being money today. So I don't know. I don't know. I was about to say that if gold were still money, it would be worth a whole lot more, which I would think it would have to. But the point of that would be that it might be worth it right today or much sooner in the future to go mine that asteroid if the price were a lot higher.
Right.
Because that's what incentivizes mining right now is that. And that's what keeps the increase in the supply kind of steady, is that as it becomes more difficult to mine, it becomes more expensive. So that was me struggling through getting the point that kind of a joke, really, just to say, like, oh, maybe gold, ironically, has survived by not being money.
Yeah, my guess is probably nothing's going to happen with this asteroid.
No, I mean, it's decades away, it sounds like, at least.
If it happens at all.
But it's the theoretical point.
Yes.
That it's like, all right, well. And who knows? Maybe one of these asteroids got embedded somewhere in the Earth's crust from, you know, a million years ago, and someone digs a little bit and finds it.
Right.
It's the same principle.
Same concept, yeah.
And that's why
Bitcoin's better.
Yeah, as Grom starts biting me. Bitcoin's better because we know that no matter what, the supply is always going to be 21 million.
Right.
There is no like risk of digging somewhere or running finding a filing on a computer that says, oh, actually there's like, you know, another 1,000 Bitcoin that I have that no one ever knew about. That cannot happen as long as people, you know, agree on this, these rules that we have and the way it's set up, it's not very likely that they're ever going to get changed, because that would destroy its value proposition. So that is one of the properties that makes Bitcoin better than gold, and which is why I have some pretty good confidence that Bitcoin's going to overtake it and become money, and it's going to drop gold's price down to industrial use levels.
Which is not much.
No, it's not. Especially because we've gotten away with not using gold for a lot of things, since it's used more for money. It really pulls the available supply for industrial uses down.
Right. So, did you have anything else you want to say that? We just kind of brought that up as a joke.
Yeah. Well, a joke, but I did also, wanna, yeah.
It's a joke, but it's a serious point. It's a real point, and it's a real threat to gold.
Sure.
Why do we say Bitcoin is better than gold? Well, that's one of the really important reasons, among others, but that's a big one. So how about your debate you had? You wanted to bring up some points to clarify some things.
Yeah, there was because I know it's still talked about a lot. The kind of this multi-coinism, multi-money vision that some people have versus there only being one money.
Yeah, competing currencies or whatever.
Right. And one of the things, there's a couple things about competing currencies. It's not, the idea is not that Bitcoin maximalism, and I did say this in the debate, Bitcoin maximalists are not against competition for money, because if we were, I mean, then we probably wouldn't be in favor of Bitcoin to begin with, because that would mean, you know, obviously there has, in order for Bitcoin to overtake something else's money, there has to be competition. So
competing with the US dollar or whatever.
Right. And if something better than Bitcoin comes along, you know, no one's opposed to it, to switching that.
Like, I don't think it's some emotional attachment to Bitcoin that I think Bitcoin maximalists get accused of.
No, and it's
at least in my experience, it's not.
And before the dollar and before these other current monies too around these fiats around the world too, before there was gold, there were other monies that were used. So this idea that, you know, you should be against competition for whatever money that you like is kind of historically not accurate. Because and in the book The Ethics of Money Production, Guido Holzman makes the point a lot of times that you don't need a government oversight for the money supply, because as soon as a money becomes not as good, or you know, there's issues with the money, or a better money gets discovered, then the market's going to naturally move towards it.
Right.
Just like anything else, we don't need oversight. But that doesn't mean that there's going to be this constant like battle between several currencies, or even that you get like this a bunch of different ones that, like, I know Andreas Antonopoulos says, like, yeah, there's going to be like Girl Scouts troops are going to have their own cryptocurrency. That is like the most absurd version of multi-coinism, which I think is just
absurd.
Yes. Yeah. I know that is the word for it. And doesn't make really any sense once you start looking at the,
All right, let's talk about that then. Why do you think that it wouldn't make sense for Girl Scouts to have their own cryptocurrency?
Sure. So money takes on basically three major functions. It's a store of value, it's a medium of exchange, and it's a unit of account. So in order for that to, especially the unit of account, that kind of by definition has to be one thing. Because prior to there being a money, this third thing that people use to make transactions, in order to figure out how much wealth you had to like calculate it against like everything. So if you started your year out with 3 chickens, 4 cows, 7 apples, and I don't know, 12 corn barrels of corn, bushels of corn, and then you finish the year with I don't even remember all the things I use. What?
Cows and chickens.
Yeah.
Whatever. Your stuff.
A different amount of each one. How do you determine whether or not you're wealthier
or poorer?
Right. But when you have a monetary unit of account, it makes it a lot easier to figure that out. So if you start the year with 10 ounces of gold and you finish with 15 ounces of gold, then you can say you had a five ounces of gold profit.
Even if you have fewer chickens and fewer cows, but more corn or whatever the case is.
Right. So in a world of money where you're doing that, if you've got a bunch of monies, it still makes it difficult. Like, it's the same problem. But how do you know if you've got a bunch of different things, especially when they're constantly changing their value? How do you value against each other? Like, it makes it so much more difficult to determine how you're doing economically. And there's a couple arguments that would be counter to that. The first one would be, well, it's like, well, I mean, Bitcoin or some other current money might be like the main one. And so you can just like calculate everything to that. But if that's the case, if Bitcoin's kind of like the main thing and kind of the middle, it's kind of the money for the monies, then that means that's got to be the most liquid one.
And that's how it is now on exchanges, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So if I've got my tractor coin, and I want to buy Girl Scout.
Wait, is this Tractor Coin or RV Cash?
Tractor Coin. It's when I say Tractor Coin, I mean the real Tractor Coin, which is Tractor Coin Cash RV.
Okay.
So I don't understand why I need to distinguish between Tractor Coin Tractor Coin Core and Tractor Coin Cash RV. Like, like that's the way you, you okay. talk about
all right,
it.
Fine.
Okay. For people that like, you know, to make it easy to understand and not try to pull a fast one over on anybody. Go to tractorcoin.com and you can buy Tractor Coin by directing you to buy Tractor Coin Cash RV. So so if I've got my Tractor Coin and I want to buy some Girl Scout cookies, but the Girl Scouts are only going to accept their Girl Scout coins, what I have to do is I have to go, and Bitcoin is kind of that middle thing, the most liquid thing that gets everything exchanged for. Then I trade my I got to find someone that is willing to sell me Bitcoin for Tractor Coin.
Which would anyone? Yeah, sure.
And then I have to find someone who wants to trade their Girl Scout coins for my Bitcoin. Or, you know, I could find someone who wants to buy
Girl Scout coins.
But it's difficult to do that. And,
are you saying trade? Well, go ahead.
Well, no, it's just difficult because you have to have that coincidence of wants, and having that third thing makes it a lot smoother. So if we're saying, and then once I get my Girl Scout coins, I buy the Girl Scout cookies. If we're saying that's how it's going to work, and then the Girl Scouts want to buy, I don't know, what's Slappy Coin? What's something that you sell, Slappy?
I'm just a Bitcoin guy.
Thanks for fighting the hypothetical. But you sell apples. Slappy sells apples, and so in order to buy apples, you got to get Apple coins. So the Girl Scouts sell their Girl Scout coins for Bitcoin, and then sell their Bitcoin for Apple for Slappy coin. Then they can buy the apples.
Right.
So it seems pretty complicated, right? And people might say that, oh well, you know, we have software to do that, to make it a lot smoother. But there's a couple big issues with that. One is that you are assuming liquidity in all these markets.
Anyone who bought a lot of mint coin back in the day knows there was trouble with that.
Yeah. I mean, we see it all the time when there's
by the way.
Yeah. But a lot of these exchanges with some of these smaller coins, it's, you know, let's say, you know, just because you have, yeah, let's just pick a, if you have mint coin, we'll pick on that as an example, and you've got like 10 million mint coin, and that mint coin is worth, that $10 million or 10 million mint coin is worth $10,000. Just let's, you know, pick numbers.
Yeah.
And you want to sell it because you want to get that $10,000 off it. Well,
need someone to buy it.
Yeah. If there's no one to buy it, you're stuck.
And that's
with
what
it.
Happened with me. I sat with my mint coin for a long time with sell orders out there. Not even like stupidly, insanely high sell orders, just like a couple Satoshi.
Yeah.
It eventually did sell, but.
Right. Man, but that's a major problem.
It took a long time.
That's a major
problem.
That
was a couple years ago.
Yeah. That's a major problem if you're trying to, if you want to buy Girl Scout cookies now.
Right.
You got to buy Girl Scout coins. So, you know, that's a major assumption that's put there, because there's services like Shapeshift that I think does like the atomic swaps between coins. So see, that solves the problem. Well, it solves the technical problem maybe, but it doesn't solve the economic problem of there always being a buyer or seller. Whereas kind of implicit in the argument or the whole setup of this scenario is that, well, Bitcoin will be the one that people trade between. All right. So what is the purpose of holding anything other than Bitcoin then? Because obviously everyone demands it, and people are going to want to hold a supply of it so that they can make exchanges for other things. So it's the same thing as solving the coincidence of wants and having the third thing for just barter of goods and services, instead of having it for, you know, adding that layer on top of it for money. That if the third thing that we're trading for is going to be Bitcoin or whatever it is, then why in the world would people be holding on to this other stuff ever? And it's going to put downward pressure on those prices anyway, because people don't want to hold it. Because what's the point of having Girl Scout coins if you're not going to buy Girl Scout cookies? you're going to want to dump it right away because it's not worth anything. It's not worth as much to you. Where if Bitcoin is the thing that you can buy anything with, then that's the one you want to have.
That's what you want. Have your right? Bitcoin. Yeah. And that's real. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
What was the other? I said there were two things and I went on the one tangent. I think I talked about fungibility and then I forget. But the other point, the other issue, there were two. I said there were two arguments. One was using Bitcoin as a third thing. And I might have answered both in that scenario inadvertently.
You may have.
But the other issue is that with all these, what never gets brought up when people talk about multi-coinism is the security behind these other coins. And that's a huge part of it because, you know, these are distributed ledgers that require the exertion of energy and electricity. And so, you know, selling or, you know, effort, a lot of effort to secure it. And right. So if I just create a random altcoin and say like, oh yeah, this is going to be in the economy and gonna compete with Bitcoin. Well, it would be trivial to attack. And so like, you can't just say that this stuff is going to exist when it's the only reason that it still exists is because no one has decided to attack it yet. Whereas Bitcoin would be very difficult to attack. Not saying it's, you know, it could never have issues or anything or people couldn't figure it out, but it is by far the most difficult to attack and is designed to make it more profitable to play by the rules than to attack it. So if you're looking at, and there is a...
All right. Well, I don't want to cut you off, but I'll pose a scenario.
Sure.
So the U.S. government doesn't want Bitcoin. Why couldn't they figure out a way to attack it and kill it and do a 51% attack or whatever?
Well, I mean, they could try to do that. It would require a massive
investment. You talked about the incentives to play by the rules. Well, the government doesn't have an incentive to play by the rules. They want to destroy it. So what do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, government in its abstract doesn't. They probably want to destroy it. But individuals and government, you know, if they're mining Bitcoin and successfully mining blocks and getting the block reward or transaction fees, I mean, that's a lot of money right there. So they might be tempted to, and it's happened before. I know in, was it Venezuela? I think it was, where they have subsidized electricity and people, like, if they're getting free electricity, they buy Bitcoin rigs and start mining it, which you're not allowed to do. But then they go find out that after the police seize the mining rigs, they're mining Bitcoin themselves.
Right.
So that desire for increasing your wealth position is a very strong one. The other thing is that, you know, there's it would probably bring more miners online if they knew that there was an attack against it to try to fight it off. And when you're doing a 51% attack and just trying to mine empty blocks to just destroy it, you're kind of doing a nosedive and hoping that you can outlast everybody else. And part of the thing is, even if you successfully attack Bitcoin and make a lot of the miners drop out, the difficulty adjustment doesn't happen for, I think it's like 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to maintain that attack and not have other people be mining blocks while you're doing the attack, you have to sustain it. But as more, the difficulty stays the same though. So if a lot of miners drop out, you still have, you're extending way more, energy and electricity and cash or money to continue the attack to be mining these blocks. So in order to mine a block, if you know, you're now taking on what what the others were doing too. So, assuming that you're probably like mining every block if you're getting everyone to fall out. So, actually, no, that's not quite right. It would still be the same amount. Well, I don't know. No, it would. No, I was right because the other people are in there, and just because you have 51% doesn't mean you're going to solve every block.
Right.
But let's say that you successfully get 95% to drop out, and you have 95% of the hash rate. It's now going to take you longer to do, assuming you don't increase your own mining. So it's going to be more expensive for you to do
it. It's going
to
be very expensive.
It's taking longer for you. The more people that drop out before the difficulty adjusts, the longer it's going to take for you to mine a block, assuming that you don't increase your how much mining power you're putting to it.
This investment is going to have zero return.
Yes.
So you're putting out a lot, using a lot of energy.
Yeah. It's like you're doing the, I called it a nosedive earlier, but what's it?
Yeah.
But you're hoping that people crash before you do.
Right.
It's like doing what a lot of businesses, what they call predatory pricing, makes it seem, nasty, is when a business wants to knock out its competition, so it offers super low prices. And do it long enough that runs their competition out of business because they can't deliver the good or service at such a low price. But you are hopefully, the idea is you're big enough that you can absorb that so that it's worth the investment of losing whatever you're losing out, because you're going to control way more of the market after that. But you
can't run the low prices forever.
Yeah. And you're not getting the same thing at the end of it. You're just destroying hopefully destroying a monetary system. And assuming that once you're done the attack, that they're just not going to start it back up again.
Yes.
So it's very difficult to do. And the longer they wait, the more difficult it's going to become, the more expensive it's going to become. So it's kind of funny that they're like kind of fighting against, silly ICOs and stuff and getting attention, putting their attention there. Meanwhile, while Bitcoin's kind of just like flying under the radar, accumulating more hash and becoming stronger and stronger and stronger. So it's a pretty good thing. It's pretty interesting how it's working out, that if they went after, if someone understood this way earlier on, then they a much better chance they could have stopped Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
But the longer they wait, the more difficult, more expensive it's going to become. And so it's looking good.
Absolutely. Do you have any other points?
No, not about that. I think that, do you think that kind of covers it? I mean, if you have people listening, if you still don't agree or have questions on it,
or think you're just wrong,
right, then I'm happy to hear feedback on it. I think I did what I could to address the having the availability of the technology and the knowledge of the prices and to be able to technically exchange back and forth. But again, like, the liquidity matters a lot. And then at the same time, the security matters too for things, because, do you really want to hold your wealth in something that can be easily attacked? Or do you want to hold your wealth in something that is going to, be the most difficult thing to attack?
For sure.
Yeah. I don't know if you, I was going to transition to something, but
no, go ahead.
You had something.
Go ahead.
And that brings up the, kind of the store of value thing. Cause that's another thing that people criticize Bitcoin for, is that it's a, the whole store of value thing. And it's a straw man to say that, oh, well, now people just say that Bitcoin is only a store of value. That's not what we're saying. It's that Bitcoin, if things go through stages, in order to become money. And the stages are those properties of money. but it also adds kind of a first one, the collectible. There has to be a reason for something without monetary value to be held at all, to be used at all. And that's the collectible thing. Like when you, when someone first dug up gold out of the ground, it didn't be like, wow, this is, let's just start using this as money. It probably like looked kind of nice and shiny. And so they used it for decoration. So people had a reason for people to demand it and have it and supply it. So, and then as the properties for it got discovered, it became useful for other things. So the same thing kind of applies to Bitcoin. And so these stages of monetization are collectible, store of value, medium of exchange, and unit of account. And I don't think that they all happen discreetly. Like you don't have this like, all right, we are in
we're in the collectible
stage, yeah. And then now we're out of the collectible stage and in store of value stage. But it's also how much they're all happening at the same time. I don't know. I mean, that's debatable, but I think we're definitely in a stage where it's a, you know, becoming a store of value. And I think it makes a really good case that it has been because it started out as being basically worth nothing. And now what's it like $10,000 or $11,000 per coin? So, you know, if you flatten out all the peaks and valleys from the volatility of it, if you're holding over time, you know, I think it's been a pretty good store of value. And so why would, you know, that's one, it's important for becoming money because if something's appreciating in value and has the expectation that it's going to increase in value, then it's going to want people, it's people are going to demand it to hold their wealth.
Right.
And this is where you get like things like Gresham's law and Thier's law that says that that people are going to sell off the thing that depreciates in value and want to hold on to the thing that appreciates in value. And so as it continues to appreciate in value and you're selling off and dumping, you know, in this case, Bitcoin, you're kind of holding or hodling all your Bitcoin because you expect Bitcoin to be worth more in the future. So you're not going to want to spend it because if you're spending it, unless you're replacing it right away, which kind of doesn't make sense, then you're losing out on what you expect to be future gains. So kind of the,
right. So if you have a dollar bill or the equivalent of a dollar bill in Bitcoin.
Yeah. And you want to go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say, and you go to a store that accepts Bitcoin and dollars, which one are you going to use?
I'm going to spend the dollar.
Why?
Because I expect the dollar to be worth. Right.
But don't you want Bitcoin to be adopted? Don't you want merchants to use it and accept it and use Bitcoin? Why wouldn't you spend the Bitcoin?
Yeah. So the whole merchant adoption thing, I think, ignores a lot. Like, unless I just don't understand the argument very well, but like, they say, yeah, we need merchants to adopt Bitcoin so it become it can scale up and be used as money. But why would a merchant want Bitcoin to begin with? Isn't it the same reason that, you know, Joe Schmo Hodler wants Bitcoin? Because that, I mean, as you dump your fiat, as you dump the stuff that's going to be worth less, that price gets pushed down. And as there's less Bitcoin moving around in the markets, it becomes more difficult to get it. So the price goes up naturally until you reach a point where fiat or whatever the junkie money is worth so little that just no one's going to accept it as payment. And they're only going to accept Bitcoin as payment, at which point you have to sell your Bitcoin to get stuff,
right?
Which basically means that Bitcoin's money when it reaches that level, because it's going to get to the point, and it already is. I know some people that have that run merchant services that they accept dollars at a premium, so they charge you more if you're going to give them dollars for payment as opposed to Bitcoin. And as Bitcoin appreciates in value, and the dollar depreciates, you know, you're not always going to have the same price. It's not going to be like, all right, you can either buy this in Bitcoin or dollars for the same amount. People are going to start charging you a premium to pay them in fiat.
Right.
And, you know, and a good example is merchants that accept Bitcoin. I mean, we accept Bitcoin at Liberty Mugs, and we don't sell it.
Right.
Once we get it, we keep it and we hold it. And so, you know, there's a case of a merchant, you know, hodling. But the stuff that, like, what was it, AT&T is quote unquote accepting Bitcoin, unquote, for payment.
Right.
But they're not really. No, they're not, because they're just using a service that you pay that pay Bitcoin, but they immediately get dollars.
And convert it right to dollars.
Right. So is that a bad thing? I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, but it's not.
No,
AT&T adopting Bitcoin by any stretch of the imagination. They're just getting money out of you the any way they can. I mean, maybe the service that's doing it is the merchant adoption of Bitcoin, and I don't know what they're doing with it, but I'm sure they have they've costs and everything.
Someone's getting it and holding it, though. I guarantee that.
Right. And then I've also seen things like, oh, well, you hodlers are saying that, you know, never spend Bitcoin ever. So miners get the Bitcoin and they don't sell it. And, you know, all the whole hodlers have their Bitcoin and they don't sell it. Well, miners have expenses.
Mm-hmm.
And if their profit is in Bitcoin and they have, they have capital and operational expenses as well as other things. I mean, they have to spend resources on it, so yeah, they're probably going to sell off their Bitcoin in order to do it, since that's how they're getting their income. So I don't think miners would, in the interest of hodling, I don't think miners are going to like run themselves out of business. Much like if hodlers ran out of fiat, I don't think they're going to starve themselves to death, because they said, well, I'd rather starve myself than get rid of any of my Bitcoin.
Right.
That is my dream, that I am in a place that sometime in my life that I have to start spending my Bitcoin, because that means that I'm also going to be demanding it as payment, which means again that Bitcoin's money at that mm-hmm. point. So that's my case for hodling. And and again, if I'm not understanding the argument for like this merchant adoption thing, I'm willing for someone to explain it to me. I just think it's an incomplete thought. And I think it's just kind of a reactionary thing to hodling. Because it seems that anything
Bitcoin
maximalists do seems like people have to just disagree with it because they can't agree with maximalists.
Yeah. But yeah, no,
maybe that's unfair. Maybe that's just my perception.
I think, like I said to you before, I think people want money now.
Sure.
And the only way you can spend your Bitcoin now is if merchants adopt it.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to get Bitcoin and spend it, I mean, that's fine. I mean, I hope you spend it at Liberty Mugs.
Yeah.
But there's a good article that that Michael Goldstein, who's known as Bitstein, he's got the Noted podcast, that it's at this Satoshi Nakamoto Institute. I think it's called Everyone's a Scammer.
Mm-hmm.
And basically that's the idea, is that, you know, it's Bitcoin is, if you understand the value proposition of Bitcoin and that it's going to become money, then you know, the price of Bitcoin now is peanuts compared to what it's eventually going to be. So if the people that are trying to sell you stuff to get your Bitcoin are like scamming you out of it, because whatever you're buying with your Bitcoin right now is not going to be worth anything close to what the Bitcoin is going to be worth at some point in the future. So it's kind of tongue in cheek with what he's saying, But it just drives the point home that, like, protect your Bitcoin. Everyone wants it. So this whole thing that, like, oh, you should sell it, or you should use your Bitcoin to buy stuff at the store and everything, might be just people trying to get your Bitcoin off you.
Right.
And that's their way of doing it, making you think that, oh no, this is actually the way that it's gonna help you, is by getting rid of it.
Right.
So
there you go.
Yep.
You got anything else to add?
No. Do you have anything? I think we covered a lot of stuff.
We didn't talk about a free market story though. Do you have one?
The news article that told us that there's a Bitcoin asteroid.
That's a good one. Did I talk about diapers in previous episodes?
I don't think so.
No. So this is, I have multiple kids, and there's some commercial. I don't know what brand of diapers it is, but it's like, your first kid, you're very careful. Everyone's cleaning, washing their hands before they touch the baby. And then it shows the mom with her second kid handing it to a car mechanic while she does something. And the joke is, experienced moms buy cheaper diapers because they all work. Right.
Right.
Whereas for your first kid, you're spending all this money to make sure everything's clean and perfect and whatever. Well, now that I'm on my fourth kid, who is in diapers, the cheap brand of diapers, which I buy, has the same features that the expensive ones had when I had my first kid, that the cheap ones didn't have at the time. And so I thought that was interesting, because the price is about where it always was. It didn't go up. That's why we continue to buy them. But they keep getting better. And so there's this little, indicator on the outside of the diaper that changes colors when the diaper's wet. That wasn't on there when we had our first child.
Was that technology brought over from Coors Light?
Yes. The mountains change colors.
Yeah.
And that's, so they put little mountains. They just take a Coors Light label and stick it on the outside of the diaper, and it changes colors when the diaper's wet. no, but why it's cool is because when our first kid, we were like, oh, these are the nice diapers. Sweet. It has the indicator on the outside. Now the cheap ones have it for the same price.
Yep. Now you don't have to stick your face in the, and
yes, exactly. You don't have to pull it open and look or check or feel or whatever. You can tell. Now the diaper gets heavy, it weighs down. I'm a diaper expert these days. But the point is, and when you talk to people who are critics of the market and all they want is your money, it would seem to make sense that these cheap brand of diaper, which is known as the cheap brand, is, why would they improve? But they did improve, and they charged the same price. So obviously the technology got cheaper, or they found a way to make it and not lose money. So somewhere along the process got cheaper. And they decide to add more for the consumer at the same price, not keep it the same and the same price, because if they didn't have that indicator, we can assume their profits would be higher.
So how much better do you think diapers are going to get when Bitcoin becomes money? When not only does the technology
fantastic.
Get not it's only does
gonna change themselves.
Yeah, not only does the technology get better, but it's just going to be, since Bitcoin's going to be appreciating in price or in value, then it's going to become cheaper to buy the same diaper, just by the nature of the money. Man, there's going to be so
but
much
unfortunately,
capital investment.
Well, maybe unfortunately, but hopefully. Well, actually, yeah, no. Hopefully, I'm not in the diaper industry at that time.
Are you sure? Because at the rate you're going,
yeah, I know.
Well, maybe you will be in the diaper industry at that point.
I might be.
Yeah. So you really, for your sake, because you are way, way, way older than me.
Way older.
You better hope that Bitcoin becomes money so you can experience the pinnacle of human flourishing.
Well, that's what I'm waiting on.
When it comes to diapers.
That's why I hold my Bitcoin for diapers.
Yeah, for diapers. So this is going to be the new meme for diapers.
For diapers.
Better diapers when we're old and incontinent.
Yes. For diapers. I can see the future.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's all I got with my free market story.
Diaper maximalists.
Yes.
All right. So again, the show notes page for this episode is mcflugel.com/151. We are going to link to the Peaceful Treason episode.
Do you have any more links?
Yeah, I had like before we did this episode, I had like 15,000 that I wanted.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
You can't.
Do you want to do the gold thing? Can you send me the?
Yeah, I'll send you that.
And yeah, there's probably gonna be some other stuff in there too.
Yeah, go check it out.
Yeah. All right, and then go to libertymugs.com, buy that $100 mug while it still means something. And
Really want to show everyone how rich you are, buy two or three of them.
Yep. And then check out the link to 10hoursofbitcoin.com. And if you're interested, try to go collect that bounty worth $2,000 worth of Bitcoin. So, all right. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you next week.